Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada. Here is Peter Royce.
At the time of its inception, the CRTC, the Canadian Radio Television Commission, appeared to many Canadians as a noble, even heroic, protector of the public interest, and it had a mandate to put the Canadian perspective on the media. The stakes were high. They involved the allocation of control over a crucial branch of mass media. At issue was this kind of society that was to be formed through citizens' consumption of mass media. Herschel Hardin is an author and media analyst who's chronicled the gradual takeover of Canadian public broadcasting by corporate interests and also the consequences of that. He's joined me on the phone today from his home in West Vancouver. Good morning, Herschel. Welcome to Red Eye.
Thanks, Peter.
So now let's go going back. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation was established in 1936. How well did it do at fulfilling its original mandate?
Well, it did a really good job. Its original mandate was to create a Canadian broadcasting against the possible invasion and takeover by the American networks of Canadian radio. And in those days, there weren't a lot of radio networks. The CBC was the only national radio network. There were a few local stations, and originally they were quite low-powered. And the CBC gradually did a very good job. In fact, CNR Radio, Canadian National Railways Radio, which was the predecessor model, did a good job. And during the war and after the war, the CBC, World War II, the CBC really came into its own. Things began to fall apart as private stations multiplied. They were only supposed to be local stations, but they lobbied for higher power. And when television came, American influence and the licensing of new private stations virtually made our television spectrum an American spectrum.
Huh. So with regards to the public broadcasting, did it serve, what sort of values did it serve in terms of airing of diversity of perspectives and concerns?
Well, there have been a lot of complaints about the CBC, and I'm actually one of its most vocal critics. But I think by and large it did very well. It does have a mandate to broadcast a balance of views and a variety of views. The trouble with the CBC is that it sees the sphere from within which there's a variety much narrower than I do, for example. And it's pegged to a spectrum of people that leaves out a lot of others. I think people on low incomes and others like that aren't served very well by the CBC at all. I mean, we get on News World, we get stock market news and financial speculation news and all the rest. We even get it on the national. But we don't get service programming for that part of our population that is having difficulty making ends meet. And that's just one little example of where the CBC's frame excludes a lot of people. But compared to the others, it does an extraordinary job compared to the American, the major American networks, compared to Canadian networks, compared to CanWest and so on. It does a wonderful job. And the basic difference is that the CBC is, to a large extent, although it depends for $400 or $500 million on commercials, to a large extent it's publicly funded. So it has the flexibility to do things like opening night, Thursday nights, for example, which is, you know, last Thursday they had a classical music concert and stuff like that, to appeal to that kind of audience with that kind of variety. The private stations are basically American stations. They depend for their revenue on flogging cheaply acquired American programming. And what happened with the CRTC was that they didn't recognize this. They refused to recognize it. They pretended that they could regulate these private broadcasters into doing Canadian content. And they licensed them, and the broadcasters, including, by the way, maybe the most notorious example, was Izzy Asper. And CKND, the station in Winnipeg that began his building of the media empire, which now dominates lower mainland media, broke its promises right and left, was never relieved of the license, and this whole charade continued over 10, 20 years the result was there was no real debate about how we should finance our own television over and above, at that time, the one CBC network, and now we have two with News World, and of course the equivalent in the French language. So we've ended up with a multiplicity of stations here that depend for their survival on American programming, and even the CBC on flogging commercials, which is a whole other can of worms. Broadcasting television should really be, in my iconoclastic opinion, should really be financed without commercials. It makes sense from almost every viewpoint.
How did those sort of commercial and pro-privatization interests make inroads into that public system?
Oh, the usual way, appearing at hearings, pretending, promising the world, having friends in contributing to political parties, having friends in those political parties, forestalling any kind of larger debate on how television should be financed. For example, financing television non-commercially by public appropriation or by a license fee from cable subscribers or however you want to look at it is actually extremely efficient because almost all the money goes into the actual operation of television. Whereas financing stations commercially involves making commercials, selling them, sales commissions, the administration of all of that, which absorbs maybe one-third of every dollar that is spent on the system. And in addition to that, it's culturally noxious. It distorts the market. It undermines the competitive market because the whole idea of brand name commercials is to charge over the market price. Well, every time somebody who watches television goes into a store and buys a box of Kellogg's cereal as a result of watching a Kellogg's commercial, that person's paying a premium because of this cultural propaganda, the brand name, which of course is much more expensive. And in effect, we've created not just an expensive system, both for producing television and for the consumer, raising the average price of almost everything we buy that has a brand name on it, also distort our economies because this propaganda is all about consuming goods and services rather than creating community, looking after the environment, going to school, starting businesses, or anything else that really creates a dynamic society. And we see the repercussions every day. We have too many cars, not enough public transport, but of course the propaganda of this commercialization flogs cars, and the Media Foundation Adbusters, as you know, has a wonderful anti-car commercial called Autosaurus, recognizing this. So in addition to the fact that our television has largely become Americanized, it's also largely become captive to a commercial propaganda system, expensive, bureaucratic, and propaganda in the classic sense of the word, one-way, pervasive, much slicker than Soviet propaganda, which is one of the reasons why it survives unchallenged.
It's very interesting talking about that myth because, of course, the story is out there that, in fact, it's the public broadcasting that's inefficient and so on. What I want to hear from you is what can we think about today concerning or what activities can we do, what action can we take towards promoting the future of public broadcasting?
Well, I think we can give money to Co-op Radio to begin. And I'm only half joking. I think we need to contribute to our local cooperative media. I think we have to make the larger arguments that I've made and challenge the idea of financing radio and television commercially. Making the argument not only that financially, economically, it makes more sense to do non-commercially, but also it allows much more media freedom. It allows us to do what we want to do, either in the way of journalism, in the way of pop culture, and in the way of culture in the ordinary sense of the word, and in the way that media are governed, making media more representative. As long as the major media are financed by financial corporations, then we have no choice of how media are governed. They're governed by corporations that have one objective, which is to make a lot of money, that reflect a particular part of the ideological spectrum, and eventually that works its way down into journalism and programming. It inevitably does in very subtle, sometimes insidious ways. And as long as we finance our broadcasting that way, we don't have any choice. Those are the people who own the media, and that's how they govern it. Once we decide that more and more of our media should be financed cooperatively or by public appropriation, by creating really dynamic provincial networks, maybe federating them, a network of governed by cable subscribers, you can do that too, things like co-op radio and so on. Once we decide that that's the way to expand broadcasting, I'm not even talking about newspapers now, but broadcasting, once we do that, then we can begin thinking, how are we going to make governance different, more various, more representative? We can genuinely democratize the mass media. And so in order to have democratically governed, representative, and a variety of governed mass media, we need to enlarge the part of media ownership that is financed differently. Otherwise, we can't do it. And in order to do that, we have to generate a large political debate. I should say that I try myself within the political party that I belong to and have been active in recently and been very vocal on this issue, the federal NDP. Which unfortunately has dragged its feet on this issue, though we all know how important it is. And one way or the other, we have to get this large public debate about how media are financed and how they are governed out there with a high profile in political discussion. It's one of the reasons why, although it's very small scale, Media Democracy Day today is so important, and why that work that's being done is so vital. It at least is a good place to start.
Thanks very much for talking with me this morning, Herschel. I really appreciate your comments.
Peter, a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Herschel Hardin, author and former broadcaster. Herschel Hardin is also the author of a number of books, including Closed Circuits, The Sellout of Canadian Television.
Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada.